العلي العظيم، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Today there was the news of the martyrdom of some of the very good Shias in Nigeria. There's a million or so Shias there who are led by a sheikh named Zakzaki, and today the Nigerian forces attacked them, and news reports say that both the wife of the sheikh and his son were martyred today, and some others also were martyred, and the situation there is very dire. So for the sake of those martyrs, and of course for the marhumin of this household, and all your marhumin and marhumat, please recite Surah Al-Fatiha. Before I begin the speech portion, I just wanted to take this opportunity to review very briefly a few mas'ala, because after all these gatherings are an opportunity for us to remind ourselves of the ahkam of Islam, the laws of Islam, and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam wanted us, what they want from us is to be devout servants of Allah, ubudiyyah, and that cannot be achieved unless we understand and apply the laws of Islam. One of the rules regarding Salat al-Jama'ah is that if we join the Salat al-Jama'ah and the Imam is in the first or the second raka'ah, then of course we let the Imam do the surahs on our behalf. And we remain silent. If we can hear the Imam, we remain silent. If it's Dhuhr or Asr prayers where the Imam is reciting the surahs silently, then we can either remain silent or we can do dhikr silently. But it should not be the case that we recite the surahs. However, if the Imam is in the third or fourth raka'ah, and it is our first raka'ah, meaning that we joined late, the Imam is in the third or fourth, it's our first or second raka'ah, then we have to take on the responsibility of doing the surahs. So let's say that I'm thinking, should I join right now or not join? The Imam is in the third raka'ah. I should consider and remember that I have to, if I join at that point while the Imam is standing up, then I will have to do at least Surah Al-Fatiha, I'll have to do it. If I see that I don't have time, then I can just wait a bit until the Imam goes in ruku. I can join the Imam at that point and I would not have to worry about doing the Surah Al-Fatiha. But if I join and I don't have time, then it becomes an issue where if I want to get the thawab of Jama'ah and I don't have enough time to do the Surah, then it becomes an issue. So the best thing is to wait. If we come and we see the Imam's already started the third raka'ah, we wait until he finishes going to ruku and then we join. So that in the fourth raka'ah, then we have time to do Surah Al-Fatiha while the Imam is in his fourth raka'ah. The other one is that if we are doing Furada prayers and it is Maghrib or Isha or Fajr prayer, then as a male, it is wajib to recite the surahs with a voice. Whispering is not sufficient. Sometimes you might think that, okay, there's other people there, there's a jama'ah prayer going on. If I, you know, recite, and doing my prayer, if I recite out loud, then maybe, you know, I'll be a disturbance to others. But it is wajib to recite with a voice. It is not sufficient to just whisper the surahs. You have to recite with a voice. Of course, if we're in jama'ah, then the ruling is different. If we're in jama'ah prayers, and the Imam is in the third or fourth raka'ah, I'm in the first or second, I want to do my surahs, normally I would have to recite it with a voice, but at that point, because it's jama'ah prayers, I would recite it silently. Even the bismillah, I would do silently. I would not recite in a way that the Imam would hear. And finally, one of the responsibilities that we have is to recite the salah with correct Arabic. It doesn't have to be with the Arabic of the Arabs. Sometimes we think that, oh, how can we recite like the Arabs? We don't have to recite like the Arabs, but we have to recite with correct Arabic, meaning that the letters should be distinguished from one another. Now, how can we achieve this? Well, we can learn. One of the things we can do is download the audio files in which they have correct salah. One of the places you can find this is on the school's website, waliulasr.ca. If you go right on the top, it says Salat Audio. You can download the MP3 files. You can put them in your car, play them for yourself, for your families. And then once in a while, it's a good idea to check with a scholar and say, do you mind if I just recite the salah? just make sure that, you know, there's anything that you can get it corrected. Because after all, the one thing that we will be asked about before anything else will be our salat. In qubilat, qubilat, ma siwaha, in ruddat, ruddat, ma siwaha. If it's accepted, then everything else will be accepted. If it is rejected, then everything else will be rejected. May Allah help us to learn our responsibilities and act upon them. Salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Can you please move forward a little bit? Make room as well.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Looking back at the events of the last couple of weeks, it's been amazing to note that on one hand, we see the media talking about things relating to Islam and violence, Islam and terrorism. You see candidates like Donald Trump and the type of foolish, you know, things that he's spewing from different opportunities he has to speak about Muslims and creating fear and even stoking violence against the Muslims. But in parallel to that, especially those of us who are followers of the Ahlul Bayt, what we have also been witnessing is the largest gathering of people ever in the world in the Arba'in celebration, Arba'in commemoration. Now those who have come back from that, when they tell us their stories, we see something 180 degrees opposite to what the media is talking about relating to Islam. Mu'mineen are telling stories of the type of sacrifices they saw along the way, the type of generosity and hospitality and love and compassion that they witnessed. I'm sure you've heard the stories. One brother recently, he put it in a very special way. I asked him, you know, how was your experience? It was the first time that he had gone. He thought about it for a moment and he says that there was a lot of nur in the atmosphere. And then he says that everywhere I looked, I saw angels. Everywhere I looked, I saw angels. The way that they treated us, the way that they served us, I saw nur and I saw angels. This, in contrary to the Islam of violence, the Islam of terrorism, what is this spirit that we saw there? One of the aspects of Islam that we see displayed in such a commemoration is the concept of Islamic brotherhood. And that's what I wish to speak about, inshallah, without taking too much time in the majlis tonight. Allah Ta'ala in the Quran regarding the true companions of our Prophet, meaning those who would wish to be a companion of a Prophet, Allah lays out the guidelines for who is truly with the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. He says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم محمد رسول الله محمد صلى الله عليه وآله
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
is the messenger of Allah. وَالَّذِينَ مَعَهُ أَشِدَّاءُ عَلَى الْكُفَّارِ رُحَمَاءُ بَيْنَهُمْ Those who are with him are those who have these characteristics. Number one, أَشِدَّاءُ عَلَى الْكُفَّارِ They are very fierce and firm against those who deny the truth, those who are the stubborn enemies who wish to attack. Number one. Number two, رُحَمَاءُ بَيْنَهُمْ They have mercy when it comes to one another. تَرَاهُمْ سُجَّدًا رُكَّعًا You see them, that they constantly perform sujood. They constantly perform ruku'. يَبْتَغُونَ فَضْلًا مِنَ اللَّهِ وَرِضْوَانًا They are seeking bounty of Allah and His pleasure. سِمَاهُمْ فِي وُجُوهِهِمْ مِنْ أَثَرِ السُّجُودِ They're the marks of prostration and humility can be seen even in their faces. This is the description given of those who are truly the companions. The second portion of this is what I wish to focus on. رُحَمَاءُ بَيْنَهُمْ That they have rahmah for one another. they have rahma with one another. Rahma is the plural of Rahim. Rahim, as you know, is the name of Allah. Allah is Ar-Rahman and He is Ar-Rahim. But there are some names of Allah. Some names of Allah are reserved exclusively for Allah. But there are some names where if a servant of Allah strives, he or she can become a mirror for that name to be displayed amongst the people. One of them is Ar-Rahim. Allah is the one who is Rahim. Allah is the one who bestows His mercy upon those who deserve it. We too can be Rahim as well too. And this is one of the qualities and qualifications that we have for somebody who is truly a companion of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. In one hadith, which is reported from Imam Ali alayhi wasalam from Rasulullah, he says that, Rasulullah says that for a Muslim, every single Muslim has 30 rights on that Muslim. 30 rights. He goes on to name them and he says that each one of these rights, either it's the case that you have to fulfill it for your fellow brother, or you have to go to them and apologize if you can't fulfill it. But otherwise, on the Day of Judgment, they have a claim on you. 30 of them. And really, you know, if you go to look at it, each one of these 30, each one of them individually is worth studying. Each one of them individually is worth having lectures upon, studying, understanding. How do we implement these in our lives? And in past, in the Hawza as well too, ulama sometimes they spend time on these to educate us, to make us familiar with this concept of Islamic brotherhood. One of these rights that Rasulullah mentions is this right. He says that أَن يُحِبُّ لِغَيْرِهِ مَا يُحِبُّ لِنَفْسِهِ وَيَكْرَهُ لِغَيْرِهِ مَا يَكْرَهُ لِنَفْسِهِ. What that means is that a Muslim should love for his brother what he loves for himself, and he should dislike for his brother what he dislikes for himself. Now, before we go on, just ponder upon the statement. To love for your brother what you love for yourself, and to dislike for your brother what you dislike for yourself. A very easy reaction to this statement is to say that, okay, I've heard this before. This is something, obviously, you know, we should love for our brother. Of course, we love our brother, 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 you know. It's very easy to dismiss this and to say that it's something which is easy. But believe me, if you go and ponder upon this and ask, if you ask ourselves, do we really understand this and implement this? I think that, perhaps speaking for myself, there is room for improvement when it comes to this. Because after all, we live in a society where this concept is not to be found. It doesn't exist. It's foreign to this society. In this society, first of all, do you know your ghair? Do you know who your ghair is? Do you know who it is that other than yourself? Right? Do you know your next door neighbor's name? Because before you can love for your other what you love for yourself, you should first know them. Right? Do we know who the other people are? Second of all, in this society, what we strive for and what we yearn for and what we desire has to do with ourselves and our families. We don't really have a care that much for others because after all, it's a capitalist society. These days, of course, you know, even when it comes to family, it's the definition is narrowing. You know, you love for your family, okay, so now it's like, instead of the parents, now it's the dog, right? The parents are now in the home, in the retirement home. Now you love for yourself and your dog. That's kind of what the focus is about. This is the way the society is. But you see, in Islamic brotherhood, it's a different sort of concept. يُحِبُّ لِغَيْرِهِ مَا يُحِبُّ نَفْسِي, meaning that number one, I should know who my Muslims are. I should be in touch with them constantly and be aware of what is happening with them. And I should love for them what I love for myself. I should be looking at them and saying that my success depends on their success. And similarly, those things which I dislike for myself, I should dislike for them as well too. If it's the case that I see some trouble that they're going through, I'm going through that trouble as well too. That's what it means to be a brother. one of those 30 things that it means to be a brother. But it's a very hard thing to understand this and implement this in our lives. Human tendency is one that says that if somebody else is achieving, I look at that and I ask myself that, why him? Why not me? I want that. I don't want him to have that. This comes in different forms. It can come in the form of material success. Somebody else is, you know, getting successful. They're going, getting good grades in school. They're getting, you know, top positions in university. They're landing accolades after accolades. They are, you know, getting into good companies, so on and so forth. I look at that and I say, oh, okay, that's him. When I hear about that, I don't get a good feeling in my heart. Instead, I feel sometimes from something inside of myself. Somebody else has other material gifts. Their children are intelligent. Their children are talented. He has a good voice. He recites Quran very beautifully, but my son doesn't. I look at that, okay, what do I need to do in order to get my son to, you know, do that? It's, you know, rather than looking at that as my success. Because after all, he's to be my brother, whatever is good for him is good for me as well too. But it's not just on the material level. Even sometimes on the, when it comes to success spiritually, and this is something that for, alhamdulillah, we have a community of mu'mineen, this is something that perhaps we can take as something to work on. That when we see somebody being successful in terms of their achievements for the sake of Allah, I should be looking at that and saying that that person's success is my success. There is programs that are flourishing. There are efforts which are bearing fruit. I should be looking at and saying that that is my success as well too. Not in saying that, okay, who is it that's doing that? Why is it him and not me? You see, this is the principle and the foundation for what we call unity. Unity is when I see other people's successes as my success. But it's something which is very difficult, my brothers. There's a story that's told. Imam Khomeini rahmatullahi alayhi says that at one point in his life he had gone to meet somebody who was very ill. Somebody, one of his acquaintances, somebody who was from the Hawza, he had studied. Actually, this story belongs to Marhum Ayatollah Gulbeghani. The great Marja. He went to see one of his classmates. Both of them had studied together in the Hawza. And his classmate was somebody who was a very good scholar, but Marhum Ayatollah Gulbeghani was the grand Marja. He was somebody who was well known and famous. But his colleague was somebody who was not very famous. He's about to die. Marhum Gulbeghani goes to visit him. And he says to him something very, very interesting. He says that Allah has done zulm to me. Allah has done zulm to me. He has been unfair to me. Why? Why are you saying this? He says, because both of us were students together. We were both studying under Marhum Ayatollah Hayri Yazdiyad. Marhum Ayatollah Hayri was the founder of the Hawza in Qom. We were both students together under him. We both used to attend his durus. We both used to do mubahata together. We were both like excelling in our knowledge. However, Allah made you the marja. He gave you that fame and that fortune. But me, I was a nobody. And therefore he has done zulm to me. Look at the type of thinking. That on something like this, something like taking on the responsibility of marja'iyah, rather than that being an iftikhar, rather than being a source of pride for him, he sees it as being dhulm from Allah. He has hasad inside of himself. Completely contrary to the spirit of brotherhood. يُحَبُّ لِغَيْرِهِ مَا يُحَبُّ لِنَفْسِهِ. The reason why I mentioned Imam Khomeini rahmatullahi alayhi, because there's a similar story told where he says that one time I went to visit somebody who was dying. Same thing. He says that look at how much of a zalim Allah is. Astaghfirullah. Astaghfirullah. Imam Khomeini is shocked. He says, what are you saying? He says that at this point, Allah wishes to separate. And then Imam Khomeini rahmatullahi alayhi goes on to explain this phenomenon. It's something which is a very interesting phenomenon. We have to look at it. It's what we're seeing there is a reflection of something very important. You see, brothers, at the time of death is when somebody's true personality is revealed. They say that, for example, somebody who is used to profanity, they often like swear. Sometimes people, they have a habit. Maybe they don't do it in the workplace. They don't do it when they go to the center, right? But when they go home, you know, everything, you know, it's a habit. That same person, sometimes in their deathbed, when they're being told to say La ilaha illallah and these type of things, instead they start swearing. Why? Because that's their habit. The way that we have formed ourselves with our actions and our thoughts, the quality of our ubudiyah becomes manifest in the way that we die as well. Imam Khomeini explains that what happens is that somebody who in their lifetimes was attached to the dunya, they were hungering for it. In this case, that person was hungering for power and for fame. In that case, he was attached to his family in a way which was not appropriate. What happens is that at the time of death, when that angel of death comes to take away the soul, this person sees that angel as being his enemy. He's his enemy. And because he sees him as the one who is going to now take away his soul and be the cause of separating from the dunya, so then this person takes on an attitude of hostility. At that time of death, instead of dying peacefully, he dies in a state of battle. Because now, that which he loves and which he's become attached to is now being taken away from him. Now, you know that at the time of battle, that's when things get, you know, they don't do ta'aruf in the time of battle. You don't even have formalities, right? You get down to business, you do the real thing. At this point, who is it that has commanded this angel to come and take away my soul? Who is it? Well, we know that number one, it's Allah Ta'ala, because everything is under the command of Allah. So this same person now becomes in battle with Allah. Because Allah is the one who's taking away his soul through the case of this angel. Not only that, this person becomes aware that the affairs of the universe Allah has given and deputed to the Imam. Among them, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali alayhi salam, and he sees this. He sees the angel of death as being but an emissary of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali. So that enmity that he has now turns to the figure of Imam Ali alayhi salam. This same person who in his lifetime would sing poetry and cry out slogans in favor of Imam Ali because his attachment was with the dunya, at that point when he is dying, he begins and turns to Imam Ali as his enemy. Because he sees him as the cause for his soul to be taken away. Na'udhu billah. May Allah protect us from that. This is the severity of the attachment to the dunya. And one of the ways that it can show itself is in the way that we interact with others, other Muslims. What do we have in our hearts towards them? We have to ask ourselves. How clean is that connection that we have with them? Sometimes it so happens that we see something in somebody else and a thought comes into our mind. That thought is a thought which a negative thought about them. They're succeeding, we feel a little bit jealous. They have something, we wish that they didn't have it, we wish that we had it. That thought actually is a mercy from Allah. Why? Because it's an opportunity for us to reflect and to ask ourselves that how do we feel about our brother? Do I have something in myself where I say that, okay, if he's being given something that I should be happy because their success is my success? Or do I see it being a failure on my part that person's getting and I'm not getting? If you go back again to the history of Islam, this idea of Islamic brotherhood, we see that in the Medina, in the city of Medina, there were aspects of what they were able to establish, which is a lesson for us when it comes to Islamic Brotherhood. You've heard that the Ansar were more than willing to accept the Muhajirin. You've heard that they opened their homes to them. You heard that they would even draw a line and saying that, okay, this half is yours, this half is mine. They would split everything with them. Even it got to the point where they thought that they would have to make the brothers, these new brothers of theirs, inheritors of them. Until Allah has to reveal a verse in the Quran saying that, no, your inheritors are the ones who are your blood relatives. But not these brothers that you've taken on in Islam and Iman. You must have heard also that there was one time when the Muhajirin, they had come, they didn't have anything. So Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had some opportunity to gain some ghanaim, some war booty. And at that point, because he saw that there was a need with the Muhajirin, he asked the Ansar, he says that, oh Ansar, is it okay with you if we give this to the Muhajirin? Now imagine the sacrifice at that point. The Muslims, as a collectively, have acquired some war booty. Now the capitalist mentality is saying that what? That okay, everyone should get equal access to that. But the Prophet asked them that, what do you think about this? And every one of them says that, okay, no, it's fine with us. The Muhajirin need it more than we do. Bismillah, you take it. Your success is our success. Beyond that though, there's one part of the story which is, sometimes it's not told that much, but it's a very important part. You see, there was the Ansar, and then there was Muhajirin. But there was a third group of people. And they were the people who came later on. For various reasons. Some of them were actually enemies of the Muslims, but then because of different events that took place, wars or a spread of Islam, whatever it is, they came into the fold of Islam and they migrated to the city of Medina. Or there were people who might have been stuck in Makkah, they weren't able to do the hijrah to Medina, they came later after the Pact of Brotherhood was established, they came later on. Now imagine that you are coming into the town of Medina. So much has already happened. So many battles have already been fought. Right? There are people who have already established themselves as warriors and charitable figures, and so much has gone on, and you go into that city and you see, now you're this Muslim who is just coming in. Some of these people you actually fought against in battle maybe. Okay? Imagine what might be going through your mind at that point. It's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever been, let's say that there's a gathering, this is a very poor example, but just to help us understand, imagine that you have an appointment where several families are going to meet together at the park one day. Okay, now, you're supposed to meet at 3 o'clock, and that's when the barbecue is supposed to start, everyone is supposed to start getting there, and then 4 o'clock you're supposed to start eating the food. Now, if something happens, you get there at 4:30, right? Everyone else is waiting for you. Right, they have everything prepared, everything, the food is getting cold, and then you walk in. Imagine the feeling that you have, right? It's a feeling of maybe I'd rather hide myself at this point. You're embarrassed, right? Now, just to explain that, now these people are coming into the city, they see everyone else around them are people who are established. They have so much, precedence, right? They came at early time, difficult times, they've been through so much, they're coming at that point. What should the mentality be at that point? Allah Ta'ala reveals a very beautiful verse in the Quran regarding these people. He says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم سورة الحشر والذين جاءوا من بعدهم يقولون ربنا اغفر لنا ولإخواننا الذين سبقونا بالإيمان ولا تجعل في قلوبنا غلا للذين آمنوا ربنا إنك رؤوف رحيم. This verse, if we want to understand Muslim Brotherhood, we have to study this verse. Regarding these peoples, والذين جاءوا من بعدهم, those who came after the Muhajirin and the Ansar, what do they say? Those of them who are outstanding, what do they say? يَقُولُونَ They make a dua. What is their dua? رَبَّنَا رَبَّنَا اغْفِرْ لَنَا O Allah, forgive us. وَلِإِخْوَانِنَا الَّذِينَ سَبَقُونَا بِالْإِمَانِ And forgive those of our brothers who preceded us in iman. They came first. وَلَا تَجْعَلْ فِي قُلُوبِنَا غِلَّا لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا Do not place hatred in our hearts towards them. Do not place enmity in our hearts towards them. You are the one who is Ra'uf and Rahim. You are the one who is compassionate and merciful. Look at the beauty of Islam. That at this opportunity, when jealousy would occur, when anger would occur, when it would be like, oh, that person's like this, oh, you know, I wish they didn't have, I wish I was like that. Islam comes and says that, no, you go and pray for them. In fact, you invoke the rahmah and ra'afa of Allah and you say, oh Allah, don't make my heart such that I have hatred in my heart towards them. That's the spirit of Islam. And if we are able to adopt that, and we are able to operate in this world where we have kindness and love and compassion for others, and we use the blessings of Allah in the way He intended, we're not attached to it, then we don't have anything to worry about when it comes time for death. The same examples that I gave you of these people who die cursing Allah in enmity with Him and the Ahlul Bayt, we have other examples as well too. One of the ulama says that when there's this one elderly man who I was in contact with, and he didn't have anybody close to him, but he used to be fond of me. So when he was sick and he felt that he was going to pass away, he sent me a message and said that, can you please come visit me? And you know, one of the responsibilities we have as Muslims and Mu'min is to visit those who are sick. So he goes to him and he realizes that, okay, the time is near. This old man, friend of his, is close to dying. Spends the night with him. In the morning he wakes up for Salatul Layl. He goes and checks on the man. He is awake, but you know, he's not doing so well. The alim begins the Salatul Layl. He sees that the old man also does Salatul Layl, but he's doing it sitting down because he's sick. After he finishes Salatul Layl, he goes to the old man and he sees that his situation is very, very dire. It's pretty much just a few minutes now before he's going to pass away. And he sees that the old man begins to say salam. He says, As-salamu alayka ya Rasulullah. As-salamu alayka ya Amir al-Mu'mineen. As-salamu alayka ya Fatima al-Zahra. So on and so forth. Each one of the imams until he comes to the imam of the time. And he says, As-salamu alayka ya Baqiyat Allah. As-salamu alayka ya Hujjat Allah. And he...
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Stand up. But he can't do so. In the name of the Imam, trying to stand up, he can't do so. Instead, he puts his hand and then he breathes his last. The alim realizes that this man, when he's dying, he is visited by all the masum. Every one of them comes to him, and he can see them, and he is saying salam to each one of them individually. Why? Because that's what he was attached to in this world. The clean heart, the clean heart. لَا تَجْعَلْ فِي قُلُّبِنَا غِلًا لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. Oh Allah, oh our Lord, do not place hatred in our hearts towards the believers. So inshallah, this is one point regarding the concept of Islamic Brotherhood, which inshallah we can act upon. It's a practical point. We have to review our relationships. If there's something in the past that maybe had taken place, then we need to work on amending it. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that how often he says that when I see that there are two mu'min brothers who are in a state where they don't talk to one another, then I will go and I will curse one of them. I'll do la'an on one of them. And how often will I curse both of them? Imam alayhi salam cursing. The companion says that why? He says, because why does that one who was wronged, why doesn't he go to the one who wronged him and say that I am the one who wronged you? But let's make peace here. Let's patch this up. This is the way the Ahlul Bayt wanted us to be. We ask Allah Ta'ala for tawfiq to learn the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today was the first of the month of Rabiul Awwal. The tragedy that took place on the 28th of Safar in the year 10 after Hijrah is something that continues. It's not just a one-time event. The Siraj and Munira, the lantern which was lighted, the Rahmatun lil Alameen, the mercy for all of humankind. The one that Allah had sent as a favor to humanity has passed away. And look at the situation of the Ummah at that time. In one conversation that later on Amir al-Mu'mineen has with somebody, he's describing his own state when these events are taking place. And as we hear this, we cannot help but for our hearts to burn with the burning of the heart of Amir al-Mu'mineen. He says, and I paraphrase, that when it came time for Rasulullah to pass away, this was something that was so great, and so such a cause of grief for me. I felt that of all the things that were important for me to do at this time, the most important priority was to busy myself with the preparation of his blessed body for burial. And I occupied myself with this. And all of this I was doing with such a state of sadness and grief that nothing in this world could possibly be a source of consolation for that grief except for Allah Ta'ala himself. This is what I was going through at that time. And news reached me that the Muslimin, some of them had gathered and they were fighting with each other about who was going to take the leadership while they knew that it was my haqq, they knew it was my responsibility. And this only served to put further injury to that wound I already had because of the loss of my Habib, my beloved Rasulullah. Shaykh Mufid rahmatullahi alayhi says that most of the Muslims did not come and even participate in the funeral rites. They didn't come to when it came time to bathing the body or clothing the body. Even when it came time to saying the prayers, most of them didn't even come either, because they were busy in Saqifa. They were busy arguing about the world, and they had left that one who was the source of all their blessings alone. Imam Ali al-Islam says that we kept the body unburied for not one day, for not 2 days, but on the third day we buried the blessed body of Rasulullah. But even then, they didn't come. One of the wives of the Prophet says the way that we came to know about the Prophet dying, because we were so busy in our own business, was when we started hearing the cries after the funeral, after the burial. After the burial is when we came to know about the death of Rasulullah. Look at the zulm, look at the ungratefulness that the Ummah shows to Rasulullah. Now normally, families who have experienced deaths, they say that when the body is finally buried in the ground, that's when we can finally find a bit of peace. That's when we can find a bit of solace. That is the time of passage where we can move on from these terrible and overcoming events and now look to the future. But in the case of the family of Rasulullah, we see that the tragedy has just begun when the body has now been buried. There was 3 attacks, they say, on the house of Imam Ali alayhi salam. The first one was on the first night of Rabi'ul Awwal. When they come to him, what are they doing? Why are they bothering him? He asked them, "What do you want from me?" They say, "You must give allegiance to the Khalifa." He says, "Don't you know that I have a command from Rasulullah? You ordered me before he passed away that I must be in the home and I must not go out for any reason because I have a task to compile the Quran. Don't bother me, don't disturb me as I perform this task." They leave him at that time. But we see in history that this was not sufficient for them. They launch a second attack on the house of Imam Ali al-Islam. And then there was the third attack as well too. And at that time, it was not Imam Ali alayhi salam who was at the door, but it was his beloved wife Sayyidah Fatimah al-Zahra alayhi salam. This is the treatment that the Ummah gave, generally speaking, to the family of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. A treatment of abandonment, and we see the same abandonment on the plains of Karbala. We see that on the day of Ashura, when there are thousands of people who call themselves Muslims, they see one lady standing on the plains of Karbala, Salamullahi alayha. Zainab alayha salam is looking at them and asking them, "Is there not any Muslim amongst you? Will you not see that my brother is and your imam is lying on the battlefield? Will you not come and aid him?" She sees that no one is responding. They just turn away from her. She goes to Umar ibn Sa'ad. She says to him, "Oh Umar, will you not do anything at this point?" But when the daughter of Imam Ali alayhi salam is asking him, He can do nothing but to turn away from her. She has no recourse except for to turn to Rasulullah. Rasulullah, who is the source of and the refuge in all sources of grief. She turns to him and says that, "Oh Rasulullah, wa Muhammada, wa Jadda, this is my brother. He is lying on the sands. He is covered in blood." But the enemy just stands there watching. Shimr ibn Dhul-Joshan sees this opportunity. He is urged on by Ubayn ibn Sa'd to put an end to this. This mal'oon mounts the blessed chest of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam asks a question. He opens his blessed eyes. He says, "Waylaka man anta, woe be to you. Who are you? After all, what right do you have? What right does he have to be there? Who are you? لَقَدْ إِرْتَقَيْتَ مَرْقًا عَظِيمًا. You have indeed mounted a very blessed and great mount. What right do you have to do this?" But he has no attention to that. He raises his dagger about to inflict that blow. The same type of treatment we see from the Ummah time and half time after again. The very source of their blessings is being attacked by those who are receiving them. Allah la'anatu Allah 'ala al-qawm al-zalimin wa say'ala man ladina zalamu ayyamul qayyamin al-qayyamun. We ask Allah Ta'ala to accept this majlis. We ask Him to bless this household with His choicest blessings. We ask Him to give them barakah and tawfiq to be the righteous servants, the awliya of Allah, the true servants of the Ahlul Bayt, some of those who are chosen as companions of Imam Bakhtin. We ask Him to bless particularly their children and the children of all the mu'mineen and the youth of all the mu'mineen and mu'minat, and to guide us to have a community which is united and hearts which are united, a community that is pleasing to the Imam of Bakhtin. And he looks upon his favor and his grace. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi.